Hello. Welcome to episode 11 of A Socialist Reads Atlas Shrugged. My name is Jonathan Seyfried. I am the self-proclaimed socialist, and I am doing a close reading of Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. Last episode, we had a special interlude in which I fast-forwarded to a later part of the book in order to address some of the heart of the argument in Atlas Shrugged regarding capitalism and money in particular. And I got about halfway through Francisco D'Anconia's money speech. And so for episode 20, I'm going to return to the second half of that speech. There's just so much more there. And in the meantime, we will continue our scene-by-scene close read of Atlas Shrugged. Today's moment of non-contradiction is going to be short and sweet. On Quora a few years ago in 2019, someone posted the question in the Atlas Shrugged tag, why are James and Dagny Taggart so different? And Jack Crawford responded to that on December 3rd, 2019, and wrote, quote, I think it's to demonstrate that people have free will and not determined by their heritage. Just because they had the same mother and father doesn't mean they think or act the same, unquote. So this is an interesting comment because one of the things that is a huge takeaway from Francisco D'Anconia's money speech that I got to at the end of the last episode was about inherited wealth and how inheritance really does kind of stick in the craw of Ayn Rand's whole statement here about what people deserve and what to do with money and how to see the problem of inequality. And inheritance is just, it's a toughie for all those libertarians out there. And the reason that it's such a toughie is because it's a built-in feature of inequality because there's just no way to argue that someone has earned being born to particular parents. And so by having these two siblings in such different character personality traits, and basically one is the villain and the other is the hero, Ayn Rand is kind of working out sort of how to handle this idea of inherited wealth and also the importance of being a producer, a creator, someone who moves things forward. And it's almost as if her audience, in a large part, is people who have inherited wealth, people who are arriving to this story having had a certain level of comfort. And this is just a speculation here, but remember that Ayn Rand is writing this in these somewhat prosperous years at the end of World War II with the Americans as the victors, along with British and French and allies. But within American society, we're seeing this prosperity in the post-war era, a sense of things turning a corner after the Great Depression and the suffering of World War II. And Ayn Rand is, in that particular historical context, talking to people who have, in a sense, all, no matter what was inherited or not, they've kind of all been through some hell. And so there's maybe not as much of a burden on the narrative here to take care of that situation, But remember that Ayn Rand, when she first moved to the United States, she was in Hollywood. She was working in the film business. Probably she was hobnobbing with a lot of the high-ups in the film industry. So there was quite a bit of privilege there, quite a bit of comfort there. And maybe that's where she's getting some of this pressure to address inheritance within the context of a story that seeks to put so much celebration and emphasis on people who are called producers, who deserve the title a producer, as opposed to a moocher or a looter. So we're going to see that coming through in this scene that's the focus of today's episode, the scene between Dagny and James Taggart, the first scene between them in the book. So let's open up the book. So we've got this scene taking place in James Taggart's office, and Dagny is sitting on the arm of the chair, which then James later objects to and says something like, "Why do you have to sit on the chair improperly? Why can't you just do things in the proper way?" is I think a good paraphrase of what James Taggart likes to say to Dagny over and over and over again. And so what's happened is that Dagny has canceled the order with Oren Boyle and instead placed an order with Reardon Steele in order to get material to repair the damage to the Rio Norte railroad line. And she's gone over James Taggart's head in order to do this, and essentially just dares him to override her action, dares him to cancel the order. But what she's counting on here is that her brother is so afraid to take any action at all that he'll just let things play out. But he has to get in his hemming and hawing, and that's what we see in the initial dialogue of this scene, which is James Taggart hemming and hawing, being like, "Oh, well, there's a procedure for this and you didn't follow it. And how am I supposed to, you know, tell this to the board?" And actually what comes up in the first few lines of that scene is the word responsibility. We talked about this in an earlier episode, taking responsibility. And here I'm going to read out the little paragraph that James Taggart says. Quote, "I don't think it's proper to make such a decision without giving the board a chance to express an opinion. And I don't see why I should be made to take the responsibility." Unquote. And then Dagny replies, short and sweet, "I am taking it." So it's an echo of the scene with the train conductor and engineer from just before, where they don't want to take responsibility, and Dagny's the kind of person that, as we talked about, it moves things forward and is willing to take responsibility because that is what a leader does. And here, we, I think, get treated to just a bit of maybe Schadenfreude, where we are engaging in this scene, watching James Taggart all flummoxed, and we've already gotten far enough in the story and seen enough examples to enjoy seeing James Taggart suffer as he absorbs the awareness of how his sister, who is lower than him in the corporate hierarchy, but also is lower than him in terms of social norms of patriarchy, his sister is taking charge and he's just totally knocked off his heels by this, and we as the reader get to enjoy seeing him flail around. And that's a big part of this scene. And then also it's a very big part of what a lot of the villains do in Ayn Rand fiction. So in Atlas Shrugged and in The Fountainhead, you see that when these moments, these inflection points arrive in the narrative where the hero has carried out an action and the villain is surprised by it, they just stammer and kind of crumble, and you're happy to see them crumble because they're just so annoying. And, you know, this is something that happens in plenty of stories, and I don't think is a weakness at all. I would say that I enjoy seeing James Taggart flummoxed every single time in these scenes that he appears in, because we all know people who are always not willing to make decisions even when the evidence is in and even when it's just so clear what you're supposed to be doing, and yet they still won't do it. And I think there's a legitimate critique of that particular personality trait. It's not to say that you can always just run them over and not care about their feelings, but I think that having a shared experience of frustration with these situations is totally justified in my mind. So what happens is that when James is processing this move to basically buy all of the metal from Reardon, something comes up, the word monopoly comes up, and that was super interesting to me. And what's going on is that basically Reardon is so good at fulfilling orders that, well, there's a fear that the market could fail, and then that would be the only producer, and without competition, then you would not get as good products. And this is an interesting moment here, and I'm going to read out this paragraph that James Taggart says as just another pushback against Dagny for carrying out this action. Here's what James says, quote, "That we always give all our business to Reardon. It seems to me we should give somebody else a chance, too. Reardon doesn't need us. He's plenty big enough. We ought to help the smaller fellows to develop. Otherwise, we're just encouraging a monopoly." Unquote. Well, folks, this is not how monopoly happens. This is a really good example of the straw man tendency in this book, where the reader would say, oh my gosh, look at how ridiculous this is. This person, James Taggart, wants to have more firms in the market just for the sake of having more firms, even if they're bad. Who would ever want that? What kind of dummy would just want to throw money at bad companies just for the sake of competition? That's so dumb. But what you have to keep in mind here is that it's not meant, the scene is not meant to be picked apart like I'm picking it apart. It's meant to just have like, oh yeah, there goes, you know, James Taggart offering that dumb logic to make people afraid of monopoly. But let's just stop here, right? That's why the socialist is doing a close read of Atlas Shrugged, and just investigate this moment, because what's really happening here is that Ayn Rand is strawmanning against the opposition here. The opposition to her argument is about the threat of monopoly. And a really good example here, which I mentioned in the last episode, is the Standard Oil Company. The way that a harmful monopoly comes about is with unfair and anti-competitive practices like those carried out by John D. Rockefeller, in which the bigness, the largesse of his company was able to take losses and squeeze out good companies that were competitors, because Standard Oil could take the hit from lower prices for a while until the competition died out. And then what they would do is they would raise the price after the competition had died out. They would take over their market and then they would raise the price. And that is a harmful monopoly, because it has then killed innovation that would come from legitimate competition. The kind of competition being mentioned in this little paragraph is not the kind of competition that is important when discussing the dangers of monopoly. Why? Because Orrin Boyle is not spurring innovation at all and deserves to fail. But the firms that John D. Rockefeller squeezed out when he was carrying out anti-competitive and unfair practices in the marketplace, those businesses were good businesses. They deserved to stay afloat and to give it their best shot producing and competing. But Standard Oil took away that opportunity from them. So giving chances is what James Taggart talks about here. We've got to just give Orrin Boyle a chance. We've got to give people chances, or else there's going to be a monopoly. And monopolies, well, they'll eventually exploit the customer. And yeah, monopolies will, yeah, definitely exploit the customer. That's something that we see time and time again. There's countless examples of that. And I love referring to Standard Oil as one of those, partly because railroads are involved in that whole saga. So I'll keep coming back to Standard Oil and talk more about railroads. But basically, the point I'm trying to make here is that what is being deployed in this argument from James Taggart is feelings about giving people a chance and being kind and not being mean in your business practice. And this is the straw man that Ayn Rand has set up and will just kind of beat again and again and again, but it's not the real counter argument. So in a way, Ayn Rand is not playing fair when she sets up these straw men, but you know, that's, you write your book and then you can have it analyzed, and like people such as myself will carry that out. And the only danger is a lot of folks tend to just read right through this, and they don't really slow down in certain moments. And that's part of what I'm doing here, is trying to get you to slow down. Now, on the next couple lines, what James Taggart says is the human element is very important. Oh, and then this is great. So what James Taggart likes to do is throw the cold woman archetype at Dagny again and again. You're cold. You don't have any feelings. And in fact, Ayn Rand kind of jumps on that also and says in this scene that Dagny has a face that people don't like and all this kind of stuff. So we have kind of the pushback coming from a patriarchal standpoint, all right? But it's rich, because basically what we have here is the man accusing the woman of not having feelings, like the implication is like women are supposed to have, right? And so that makes it all the more irritating. And I think there's a nice feminist twist here, that it draws readers' attention to how that patriarchal trope is employed again and again. But look at what happens a little bit further in the scene while we're on the topic of patriarchy. And it's when Jim is again pushing back for other reasons, when he finds out that it's this new alloy called Riordan metal as opposed to traditional steel. And James says that, oh, it's untried and it's dangerous because no one has tried it before. And Dagny replies, quote, "Jim, I studied engineering in college. When I see things, I see them," unquote. Well, then that's not good enough for Jim. A couple lines down, Jim replies, "Well, how can you know it's good? How can you be sure? How can you decide?" Unquote. So this is really interesting, because right here, we've got a man questioning the expertise of a woman. So fits right in with patriarchy. But what's also very interesting is that there's a questioning of expertise. And in our time, in 2022, we've just been through a saga where particularly medical expertise has been challenged and questioned. And so here we've got a hero who's got the expertise, and the expertise is not being respected, not really being given its due for patriarchal reasons. But the villain is the one who's doing that. The villain is the one who is not acknowledging the expertise of the person that he's talking to. So it's an interesting thing to notice when you've got a text that's so popular with the right wing of our political spectrum in the United States right now, and yet that same right wing is very, very quick to push back against expertise. Now, I'm not going to say that there's one reason why the pushback against expertise is happening. It certainly has a whole lot to do with the culture wars and a lot of stuff that, well, don't really have so much time to get into right now. But what I do want to say is that that's a complicated topic, and it's not just a matter of, well, you just need to follow the science, right? That is so simplistic, because what also has happened in our country in the last 20 years is the opioid epidemic, in which the medical profession really used its expertise, or failed to implement its expertise, but basically lost a lot of trust for a lot of people. And so just calling out people for questioning medical expertise regarding the pandemic, I think is pretty unfair when there's this larger historical context of the opioid crisis and how so many people were harmed by medical expertise. And then you can go back even further to really important and isolate what's happened with particular subgroups in the United States, with Black people in particular, and the Tuskegee experiments and all kinds of other awful things that have happened because of how expertise is more complicated than just saying, ah, you're an expert, I trust you fully. So how do we figure that out, right? Is a question that we're going to need to tackle right now. How to judge what works and what doesn't work based on expert testimony, when we ourselves we're in a point where science has developed to an extent where we do have to place our trust in people sometimes. So it's an interesting moment in this scene. Just wanted to point that out, because it's unintentional, of course, but this whole idea of expertise and who to trust comes up here in this little moment. And I think it'll reappear at different points in the book, and it's in the context of 2022, pretty interesting to juxtapose. All right, something else that happens in this scene is that the conversation turns to this adventure in Mexico, and there's a fear that the Mexican government is going to nationalize the San Sebastian Railroad line that James Taggart put a lot of resources into building. It was kind of like his pet project as he started out as being in charge of the company. By the way, I don't know if you noticed this, but it is mentioned in this scene that James Taggart and Dagny as COO took over about 10 years ago. So they're about 10 years in to their administration of Taggart Transcontinental. And Jim's big thing was to do this San Sebastian line in Mexico. And now there's danger that the Mexican government is going to nationalize it, and therefore they would lose proceeds from that investment and be in big financial trouble as a company. And James gets really mad when Dagny brings up that possibility and says that he has it on very good authority that that's not going to happen. And so once again, we've got like this implication that there's like these insiders who can get together and kind of share information that the rest of us don't have access to. So kind of a hint at the crony capitalism there. But then Dagny says, it's probably going to happen. And then James Taggart, in another moment of ignoring expertise and basically just for purely emotional reasons, ignoring reality, says that he just refuses to consider that it could possibly happen, not because of any reasons, but just because of how he feels about it. Okay. And so then what he says, and this is pretty condescending here and patronizing, as you tend to see in a lot of writing regarding Mexico that comes out of the United States. What he says is, quote, "I don't see why you're so eager to give a chance to Ellis Wyatt, yet you think it's wrong to take part in developing an underprivileged country that never had a chance." So here again, we've got the human element. Okay, this is what James Taggart means by the human element and saying, Dagny, you don't have the human element. Well, what it means, according to Ayn Rand, is that you're going to operate out of feelings, in this case, the feeling of pity for how Mexico is, quote, underdeveloped, unquote, and then you're just going to make your decisions based on that and not based on sound business interests. And this is a mockery of development economics, of course. And when you invest in another country, a country that is not as economically far along, according to industrial standards, well, you can make an excellent business decision by doing that. And it's not just out of pity that people make those decisions. And so basically, what then comes up is James saying selfish greed for profit is a thing of the past. And, ooh, this is big. All right, here we go. Last big idea for today's episode. Here's what James says, quote, "It has been generally conceded that the interests of society as a whole must always be placed first in any business undertaking, which," and then that gets cut off, unquote. So basically, what he's saying here is that when you are looking at things with a sociological lens, that's got to be the priority. And it's said by someone who's clearly a villain and clearly making bad business decisions and does not think clearly. So the reader is meant to kind of poo-poo that. Although morality in business is certainly something that in our time, in 2022, we are really thinking about, right? Because a lot of businesses, and I'm recording this on March 9th, 2022, a lot of businesses are shutting down their operations in Russia because of the highly immoral action that Vladimir Putin took, invading and bombarding and killing people in Ukraine. So the idea that morality and business should be separate, unless you're some idiot like James Taggart, is, I think, really out of touch with a reality, which is that business, we like to think that business is separate from the moral universe, or business is business and personal is personal, but there's gray area there. You know, I think it's wrong to completely overlap personal and business. I think that would lead to some big problems and is not appropriate in many cases and can be harmful to both personal and business side of life. But to deny that there's any overlap at all and to caricature any statement that points out overlap on that is to miss out on something pretty important about responsibility that we have to stand up for what is right and what is wrong. And so, of course, you're not going to ever agree that the interest of society always comes before the interest of business, no matter what. But also, you're probably not going to disagree with the idea that in business, some decisions are just going to be immoral. And those businesses are not going to take those decisions, even though they could make money off of them, because of morality. And there is a complicated spectrum in there. There's a gradient in there that gets lost when the villain of the book tries to stammer out that particular point in this scene. All right, a couple other things come up in this scene, which is that James Taggart wants to basically push Dagny to agree that there's complication and there's gradients. So here we've got, almost as if Ayn Rand was anticipating exactly what someone like me would say, we've got another interaction where James Taggart is saying, well, nothing is absolute. You can't just have yes or no. And Dagny says, well, yes, you can. You can say yes or no to this particular situation. And of course, there's moments where, and I'm on Dagny's side in this particular conversation, I'm absolutely on Dagny's side. But the idea that there's always going to be someone out there saying, slow down, it's complicated, that is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's made to look like a bad thing. So, all right, if someone is always saying it's too complicated, we can't make a decision, then that's going to be a problem. But that doesn't mean that pointing out complexity where complexity really exists is something that is bad reasoning, all right? It's good reasoning to point out complexity if the complexity is really there. It's just that In this scene, it's pretty straightforward. Orrin Boyle is terrible at producing steel, and it's a better decision to buy Reardon metal. It's very clear. There's not that much complexity left. It's all been analyzed. And so to say that there's complexity, or to say, oh, we have to go through our procedures and delay, is, of course, not supported by the situation here or the evidence looked at reasonably. So I think that covers what's important about this scene. And I think there's probably a couple other things that I wanted to get to, but didn't quite have time for. So I'm going to pick up with a little bit of this scene in the next episode. And then we are going to finish chapter one of Atlas Shrugged with the scene that is between Dagny and this mysterious fellow, Owen Kellogg. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Jonathan Seyfried. If you have enjoyed this episode and you're enjoying the podcast, please consider supporting my work through Patreon. There's a link in the show notes, and that will help to keep this podcast ad-free. So this has been an episode of A Socialist Reads Atlas Shrugged. Take care.